Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Well, we're taking into the weekend here. Sue will not be sitting in a deer stand tomorrow in the middle of the woods of Howard County, but I sure will be.
That is correct.
Yeah. You never done that, I'm guessing, Sue.
No.
Right? And did you try, I can't remember, did you try my deer sausage that my...
Oh, it's in the fridge. We haven't tried
really
it.
It's really good.
It looks good.
Went to G&W and my daughter shot that button buck a few weeks ago. She is already in the area of the farm where I hunt, and I'm looking forward to going up there. We're back on Monday. We have an entire week. Sue, do you realize that Thanksgiving is like 2 weeks away, less than 2 weeks away?
Yeah, it's kind of freaking me out.
Are you guys working that week? Are you and Fred? Because I'm off.
Yeah.
This is a little bit of a miracle. I'm off the whole week.
Yeah, we're working.
Okay.
And
Godspeed.
I think I'm gone. Thanks. Thanks a lot.
Sorry.
You want to bring us food? We're
well,
open
my
to it.
Son and Idris, the grandson, are coming into town.
Oh,
so,
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's so exciting.
You know what? I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll make a commitment to you. I'll bring him down here when you guys are on the air. How's
yes.
that sound?
Oh, my gosh. We would love it.
I have to do that, right? You
yes.
have to pressure me to do it. Hey, my friend Gary Stromberg at the bottom of the hour. Gary's awesome. He used to run one of the biggest PR firms in all of Hollywood and Los Angeles. They represented the Rolling Stones and a lot of acts. He's doing a new podcast about the Rumble in the Jungle, which is a fascinating piece of music history and sports history, because they did a big concert was put on, and Gary was the guy that helped put it together with Bill Withers and James Brown. He's got a classic James Brown story that he'll share, and we have an audio cut of the day as well. Right now, the host of the Michelle Tafoya podcast back with us this afternoon on 97.1 FM Talk, Michelle Tafoya. How are you, Michelle? Thanks for coming on.
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Did you ever see, one of the things I'm going to ask Gary when I have him on, did you ever see the documentary When We Were Kings about the Rumble in the Jungle?
I've been meaning to watch that thing since
it's
it
so
came
good.
Out. But
it is good.
I've heard it's really good. I got to put it back on the list.
It really is one of those, when I first saw it decades ago, I thought to myself, and I don't know that I've followed through on this process, I was so impressed with it. I'm like, this is one of those movies that I'm going to force my children to watch when they're of a certain age. And now they're of a certain age, so I should really do that. So how's your aftermath of the election working right now, Michelle?
It is crazy. Every day feels like you wake up and you go, what's going to happen today? And you anticipate it, whatever it is that's going to happen, you anticipate it being exciting and probably good news. And then you go, okay, what are the Dems going to say about this? How are they going to paint this? This has been an amazing time. I just got back from New York, and I was at Fox doing Gutfeld and doing Jimmy Fallon's show, and everyone's in a good mood there. I think they would have all survived had the outcome been different.
I think so.
But I think what feels different, Mark, and I don't know if you guys feel this way. The landslide of it, in particular, in the popular vote. This is no longer just, don't just blame the Electoral College here, folks. This was a landslide, and I think it heartens me because people didn't fall for the Hollywood celebrities. They didn't fall for the Hitler stuff. They just wanted the person who was going to go to work for them.
Really, I think a lot of us said, I know I said this to political friends, certainly on the other side before, election day. I said, look, I just hope that it's definitive one way or the other, because we didn't need to drag the country through weeks and weeks. It didn't need to be like 2000. And I was shocked that the popular vote was where it is. But here again is what's interesting, Michelle, because we know we see some of the research. We know what happened in urban areas. We know that the ad that simply said, and you've worked with Riley, you've been very vocal on some of these issues related to women's sports, when the ad says, you know, she represents they, them, and he represents that really worked. I mean, I think that that resonated with people.
It's funny. The first time I saw that ad, I was sitting with my husband, and it came on, and he said, wow, do you think there are going to be people who are offended by that? And I said, sure. But you know what? I think the majority of people are like, hell yeah, that's right, you know. And it was kind of this sleeper issue. But beyond just the fact that there are men competing in women's sports, right? Biological men competing. That's part one of the whole issue. The bigger part of the issue is they are telling you, Mark, and everyone in that studio, you have to believe that these men are actually women. Right. You have to believe that science is not real. You have to believe that this absurdity is legitimate. And I think everyone was so sick and tired of saying, of being told what they had to believe. It's like, look, we respect you live the way you want to live, but you cannot then co-opt women's sports and other and the truth.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely
cannot co-opt the truth.
So when I was very confused by one aspect of this for a long time, and I asked, I've only spoken with Riley Gaines one time, and I asked her, I said, what is it? Why can't you have people? And Michelle, you know this very well because you see the, you know, the American sports media, which is on an interesting side of this. Why can't you at least take a stand and say this is just a fairness issue? And Riley's answer was, look, if they do that, if anyone says that and admits it, the whole house of cards comes down. Right. Well, yeah. Then that person's not a woman. They have to say that's a woman no matter what. That's why they take, you know, the route that they do. But this is we have a great little political roundtable that I do on Fridays. And we had the Reardon roundtable earlier today. And these are one of those issues. This is certainly an issue. It's an 80-20 issue. It's not even close the way the
it's
American people feel about this. Right.
It's not close. And you have to ask yourself about the 20 because the trans community is so small. Now, granted, there are a lot of people who want to be supportive and all of that, but this is about, you know, this is about facts and evidence and stuff that we've known for centuries. And so this sentence of a man can have a baby, no, he can't. A man can get his period, no, he can't. You know, all of this stuff, it really.
A lot of it is common sense.
Yeah, a lot of common sense.
Right, exactly. So what do you think, you know, interestingly enough, and I hadn't talked a lot today, we have earlier this week about some of the cabinet picks, and I guess one of the stories I'm seeing today is Vanity Fair broke this story about Pete Hegseth, who is the defense secretary nominee, of course, Fox News star, and something, I'm not even getting into the details here, because they go into this allegation that is potentially a Me Too moment, which has nothing. It was never proved, but of course, Vanity Fair has to go out there and plant the seed, just like they did with some of these things during the Kavanaugh hearings a few years ago.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's so unfortunate. This is what we're gonna see. This is a preview to what we're gonna see in these hearings, and it's gonna be ugly and it's gonna be brutal. And my hope is, and to the extent that I know Pete, he's going to be all about it. He's going to be ready. There's not going to be any wavering on his part. And this is stuff that, you know, this Me Too, again, I think that the vast majority of the public is so over this stuff of finger pointing and someone was a victim and someone's a white supremacist. There was someone who called Pete a white supremacist. All of it is, again, it's exhausting.
It really
and
is.
People are tired and they just want someone who's going to go in there and get the job done.
That's my hope, you know, and they're not wasting any time. So I think a lot of us, and one of the things that I've said, Michelle, is I voted for my first president in 1984. It was Ronald Reagan. I have been a political conservative, more libertarian conservative, certainly now, since, you know, I was in high school and I've never really changed. But one of the things I've always wanted is less government, certainly less government spending. Mm-hmm. But going back to the famous Reagan quote about government not being the solution, but the problem. And let's face it, it's never happened. Didn't happen in 84 to 88. Didn't happen from 82 to 92. Government grows. They spend more. Republicans do this as well. But I feel like this is maybe the only real opportunity we've had to make some significant changes. Now, whether that can be executed in the end with the team that he's putting together, I don't know, because it's not going to be easy. I think we all have to be aware of that. But there's a real opportunity here.
There's an opportunity because you have the House, you have the Senate, and you have the president. and you've got these kind of badasses, these Avengers going in and saying, and they're all pretty young, by the way.
I know.
And going, you know, that's it's you've got this youth movement, which sets up nicely for 28, but I don't want to get there yet. But regardless, yeah. And when you hear someone say, oh my gosh, the whole DEI department of the Department of Defense is just going to resign in protest, everyone's going, good.
Good.
You know,
right.
that'll save Elon and Vivek a little time and energy so they can focus on other places to cut. I mean, that's just fine. I think people want action. People are starving for it. They see how corrupt things have gotten, how bloated things have gotten. And I really feel like we're in a really special moment. And but they got to make hay. They got to do it fast. They got to keep punching and not let anything get in their way.
Yeah, and I have confidence that's going to be the approach. So, Michelle Tafoya, let me ask this question. I'm guessing you have even more friends in, you know, places like Hollywood or, you know, serious left-wingers. I certainly have my share. And I've been, you know, shut out, told I'm not safe because of who I voted for. A lot of interesting reactions right now and a lot of denial on the left, I would say.
It's to their peril. I mean, let them keep denying, because then we'll keep winning. Honestly, I think the right will keep winning as long as the left keeps denying. It's astonishing to me how you can watch a show like The View, and it can be pointed out that people along the border voted for Trump, and Sonny Hostin says misogyny and racism.
It's unbelievable.
Misogyny and racism. It's stunning to me. It's shocking. And I think, I don't know if they're going to wake out of that stupor. I don't know if they're willing to walk out of their silos and look around. It sure doesn't seem that way right now,
no.
But that bodes very well for Republicans.
Are you going to put your application in for The View to sit amongst Joy and the team? Wouldn't that be fascinating?
I've done it before. I've done it plenty of times. So.
Well, it'll be interesting to see because, yeah, there's a lot of people that are freaking out right now. But, you know, and I hope this is true, you know, even for younger Americans, people want to see, I'm going to say the word, the S word, S get done, right? We want to see stuff get done right now.
Absolutely. We are so tired of the way that, you know, people have been dragging their feet. We have people in power that we've never heard of, and that it seems to me this machine is just chugging along at this sloth-like pace, and now you've got this, like, boost of energy. It's like the government could be on an energy drink and just go skyrocketing like an Elon Musk rocket and start doing really, really cool things.
Well, we're going to hope. We're going to keep our fingers crossed. Listen, thank you so much for coming on here again this afternoon. You have a great Thanksgiving, and we'll talk soon.
You too.
All right, take care.
You too. Enjoy your vacation.
That is Michelle Tafoya. And just kind of piggybacking off that, there was something that happened that I wanted to pay attention to when it comes to the trans volleyball player from San Jose State University, because you now have an associate head coach and 11 women volleyball players from different teams in the Midwest that have filed a Title IX lawsuit.
Oh, good.
So the background is this: San Jose State has a transgender athlete on the roster, and three Mountain West Conference opponents and one non-conference foe have chosen to take losses instead of taking on San Jose State. So Utah State joined fellow MWC schools, Boise State and Wyoming, in canceling matches, even though the Aggies are not scheduled to visit San Jose State until, some of this is dated copy. They were just given the background. So
I
you got
see.
Four schools, but when that happened was Melissa Beatty Schmooze, who is the associate head coach, was fired after she spoke against the inclusion of the trans athlete and then filed a Title IX complaint against the school.
Good.
So here's the quote, and this is from Outkick. Beatty Schmooze previously told Outkick that she was told not to speak to the media after she was terminated, accusing the school of trying to silence people that are speaking up for their First Amendment rights and for what's right. She added, "She wanted to make sure I'm standing strong, that only women should be in women's sports." Now she's a plaintiff with these other players. So the plaintiffs include, and this is another interesting part of this, I played the soundbite. Brooke Slusser is the co-captain. And if I'm not mistaken, she even indicated she was the roommate of this trans player.
That.
And she said, "Look, I've got nothing against her, but this is not fair."
No.
I mean, there's a big difference between having empathy for someone, not treating someone differently. But there's a difference between the equity on the playing field, even in volleyball. So they allege that the school and the conference violated the U.S. Constitution and Title IX by allowing a transgender athlete to play for a women's sports team and suppressing free speech rights of those that spoke out. That's interesting as well. The head volleyball coach, Todd Kress, San Jose University, and two administrators, as well as the trustees, are also named as defendant. The goal of the lawsuit is to prevent the trans athlete from competing in an upcoming tournament. And, you know, if you want to go into the legal stuff, in April of this year, they convened a meeting with the women's volleyball players and coaches to address a news article about Fleming being a male. During the meeting, San Jose State officials, including head coach Kress and senior director of media relations Michelle McDonald-Smith, told the team that, A, they should not speak about Fleming's sex or gender identity with anyone outside of the team. Look,
how do you get away with that?
Well, see, Riley Gaines will tell you, this is what happened with Leah Thomas. This is the same stuff that happened. B, if the real women, spoke publicly about Fleming being male, things would go badly for the team members. This is what they told them. See, any information about Fleming's sex was Fleming's information alone. This was Blair's story to tell, and Blair's story alone. The women on the team could not share it. This is all very consistent with what you heard with Leah Thomas, right? The female players could not share what they thought about playing with a male, and that they could not speak with others outside of the team about any safety or privacy concerns that related to Fleming about being male and playing on the team. E, criticism of Fleming for his participation on the San Jose State University team would indicate bigotry and harm their reputation and could subject them to discipline or loss of their scholarship and could be considered a violation of school policies
Good
or state
grief.
Law. Now, what I remember Riley talking about, there were athletes that were completely against Leah Thomas until the administration had conversation like this, and they said, look, this is about something so much bigger, and you guys are only going to be on the losing side of this. This is what the woke administration tells these athletes. So,
mind you, are almost kids. I mean, these are young people.
Right, 18, 19, 20. They repeated instructions by the San Jose State University administrators not to speak about Blair Fleming because it says they were intended to cause and did cause team members to fear that they could lose their scholarships or be removed from the team if they spoke out about Fleming's sex or, you know, him being transgender. The team members were told by the administration that comments like that would indicate that they are transphobic and could be considered a violation of Title IX. Just speaking out. Listen, that is an interesting dynamic.
Yeah, it is.
So they're threatening these girls, even though this is a realistic Title IX issue because women are being harmed. They're making the case that if you speak out about this, if you talk about her having a penis, then we're going to crack down on you so hard that you're not going to know what's coming. That's essentially. So during practices in August, this is this past August, before the season, Slusser, Brooke Slusser, and Baby Smoozy saw that Fleming was hitting the ball with more force than in 2023 and far harder than any women they had ever played with.
Of course.
Where Fleming stood out was spiking the volleyball and blocking on the front row due to Fleming's leaping ability and hitting power, which far exceeded that of any player in the conference and was the most explosive of any player that the associate head coach had ever observed in collegiate women's volleyball. Fleming spikes were estimated to be traveling upwards of 80 miles per hour, which is faster than a woman hits a volleyball. So the team goes to the head coach. They complain about this. The coach says it's routine for players to practice with male players, which, by the way, some of that is true. You know, female basketball players compete against men. Slusser says, you can't lie to me. At Alabama, each of the practice players was warned by the coach that if they hit harder than 70% of the girls, they would not come back to practice. No college women's team lets their males practice hit like Blair is hitting in our practices. This is going to be a winning case in court.
I hope so.
San Jose State University is going to come out on the losing end, and they are going to be recklessly embarrassed the way they should be. And you know, this is going to have an impact across the country. This one case is going to change a lot of things in this country.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies Rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
So we got a faux fight tonight on Netflix with Jake Paul and Mike Tyson. Man, that was a real fight in 1974. They called it the Rumble in the Jungle, and there was a big concert, a three-day music festival, actually, that took place with the Rumble in the Jungle. And my friend Gary Stromberg is back with us this afternoon because he helped put all that together. There's a new podcast called Rumble, the Soul of 74. Mr. Gary Stromberg, how are you? And by the way, congratulations on the World Championship of the Los Angeles Dodgers, because I know you're a huge Dodgers fan. And look, we gifted you Tommy Edman and Jack Flaherty, so you have to appreciate that from here in St. Louis.
Boy, you sure did. I saw he bought like a $4 million house out here yesterday.
Awesome. I love Tommy Edman so much. We miss him dearly. You can have Flaherty,
yeah,
but that's another topic.
I don't know why
topic.
You let him go.
Well, there's a lot of things we're not really sure of, Gary, when it comes to baseball in St. Louis. But how are you? And congratulations on another podcast, because the last time we talked to you was when you were doing the Stone 72 Tour Across America, yeah, which, by the way, was awesome. I love that.
Oh, thank you, Mark. Wow, it's really nice to be with you. I'm excited, man. Tonight's going to be big time. That fight with Tyson and Jake Paul's got everybody excited, I think. And it's how ironic, it's 50 years, like almost exactly 50 years that the Rumble in the Jungle took place. You know, that it drew 60,000 people, which is what the fight tonight will draw. And over 1 billion people watched that fight.
You know, Sue and I were talking about this because, look, I was only in 1974, I was 9 years old. But, you know, in the early 1970s, mid-1970s, boxing was so big, we would even listen to it on the radio, Gary.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, boxing really, the 70s was really the golden era, I think, of boxing. There was a number of really big fights.
But you're not really talking about boxing in this podcast. You're talking about everything that happened around that fight in the music festival, right?
That's correct. Yeah, 74 was a stellar year. I mean, there were a lot of big-time events. Watergate took place in 1974 with Nixon having to resign. And, we had this big festival. The festival took place because the president, the ruler of Zaire, Mobutu, wanted to put Zaire on the map. It was a newly independent country. And so he thought by staging this grand fight, Ali Foreman, that he would call great attention to it. And my friends Stuart Levine and Hugh Masekela came up with the idea of, well, wow, if they're going to do this big fight there, why don't we do a music festival alongside of it? So that was what was put together. And the festival, we got together some of the greatest African-American and African musicians of the time, James Brown, B.B. King, Miriam Makeba, the Spinners, the Pointer Sisters. We had just a great lineup of people that came to Africa for this festival. But unfortunately, Foreman got injured in training for the fight, and the fight was postponed.
That's why. So that was going to be my question. You walked me in. Because the festival is 3 weeks before the actual fight, right?
We were all in Africa. We were all there waiting for the fight and the festival. They were going to be concurrent. It was going to be the festival, and then the next day was going to be the fight. But because Foreman got injured, the fight was postponed, and we were already there. So nobody wanted to go back home and then come back again. I mean, it's a big trip to go back to Zaire. And there were so many arrangements that had already been previously made, and all the logistics had been, you know, in play. So we all stayed and had the festival 3 weeks before the fight, as you said.
So what were the dynamics? Because obviously you mentioned the ruler of Zaire. He plays a pinnacle point in all of this because he wants to put this on. And then you guys come from America to try to work with him. But was that a difficult process with a guy that basically is a dictator?
It was totally crazy. It was just silly. I'll give you an example. This stadium held 60,000 people, and we expected that we would be sold out because of the talent. We had 250 American musicians and 250 African musicians for this three-day festival. So all these plans and all this, you know, setting this thing up, and then comes the first night of the festival, and we show up for the festival, and there's hardly anybody in the stands. And what happened was that we learned late, obviously, that nobody would come to an event that wasn't sanctioned by Mobutu. And he had not given us the blessing, his blessing, for the event, or at least the public didn't know that he had given us the blessing. So nobody went. They were dire fear for their lives if they went and did something that Mobutu didn't sanction. So somebody in our group got to Mobutu that night and said, listen, here's the problem. And Mobutu the next day publicly sanctioned the event. And the second day, we were totally sold out.
So what happened then on the first day? Did artists still play? And you know, they just
weren't, yeah, we played. It just wasn't, there was hardly anybody there. But you couldn't see it. I mean, for the purposes of filming it, there wasn't, you didn't show the audience. But yeah, it was tough playing a festival of this size to a very sparse audience.
What was your specific role in all of that? Were you handling, because you represented, your agency represented a lot of the bands. When we talked about the Stones were with you. But what was the specific role that you had?
I was the PR guy.
Yeah.
I was in charge of taking care of the media for the event. We brought over a number of really wonderful American journalists, Bud Schulberg, Norman Mailer, George Plimpton. These were all guys there to cover the fight, but they also wanted to, cover the festival as well. So I was in charge of a number of really outstanding writers that were there to cover the event.
So I listened. Yeah, I heard the Norman Mailer connection. That's a name from the past for sure. But I was listening to the first part. Gary, I'm on the road here for a couple hours after the show. I'm going to continue to listen to Rumble, the Soul of 74. But I did hear some of it in the setup for it. So explain what the podcast is all about and how it works.
Well, the podcast sets up in context the entire realm of what took place in 1974. This was really, if you watch 60 Minutes, it's very much like a 60 Minutes episode because we give the context of world events in 1974 and the pressures that were on and especially the emergence of black excellence in the United States. It was a critical year for the emerging black power movement and all of the efforts to create awareness of the struggle that black people in America had gone through. So the fight was certainly a representative of a major force in sports, and the music festival was obviously a significant statement in what in the emerging black music scene looked like.
What was the role of Don King in all this? Obviously, he was promoting the fight, right? Did he have nothing to do with the music festival? What can you say?
No,
there?
He didn't have anything to do with the music festival.
Okay.
He tried to take credit for it. But
shocking.
Shocking. This was Don King's first entry into big time fight promotion. It was kind of interesting. There's a segment in one of the episodes in the podcast where the prelude to the Ali Foreman fight was George Foreman fighting who was then the champion, Joe Frazier, in Jamaica in 1973. Frazier had beaten Ali in New York in Madison Square Garden in 1971. And so he was the new champion. George Foreman was coming along. He was undefeated. And he fought and knocked out Joe Frazier in 1973, which was the prelude and which set up the Ali Foreman fight. But the funny thing about that story was Don King was Joe Frazier's promoter. And so he drove to that fight in Jamaica in the limousine with Joe Frazier. And as the fight progressed and it looked like Frazier was getting his ass whipped, if you excuse the expression, Don King slid over to the corner of George Foreman. And he left the fight that night in the limo with George Foreman. So he came with the champ and he left with the champ.
That's very interesting. You know, one of the things, I've always recommended this movie, and it's been a little bit since I've gone back to watch it, but it was one of the best, I think it's one of the best documentaries I've ever seen, called When We Were Kings. I'm guessing you saw that, about the Rumble in the Jungle.
Won the Academy Award.
Yeah, it was really, really a great movie, and I got to go back and watch it again, but obviously that's framed around the same story that you're talking about. One of my favorite stories that you share, I think the first time we met in person, you told me the story. I've had you repeat it on the air, but you got to share the story again. You're on this plane. I can't remember if you're leaving Zaire, James Brown. There's kind of excitement, kinds of excitement. Gary, you take it from here.
Yes, that's in the podcast as well. So we're flying up a charter flight from New York to Zaire, and it's an 18-hour flight. It's a long flight, and we had 250 musicians packed into this plane. And because it was charter, you could bring all your stuff with you onto the plane. So the plane, all the aisles are packed with instruments. There was musical stuff all over the plane, and it's totally packed. And what was what had been the first class section was given over to James Brown and his band because he was the headliner. And we're all crammed into the rest of the plane. And we make this long trip to the first leg of the trip was to Rome. So I don't know, like it was 8 hours or something like that to Rome. We get to Rome, everybody's exhausted. They fuel up on the tarmac, and they didn't let us off the plane because we were going to take off as soon as we had refueled. And we're sitting there, everybody's anxious, and you know, our nerves are pretty shot from all this activity.
Sure.
And the pilot comes on the loudspeaker and says, "Listen, ladies and gentlemen, we have a slight problem. We are way overweight on this flight, as you can imagine. And in Rome here, we have a short runway. So we've been told that based on the weight we are carrying, we won't be able to take off unless everybody in the front of the plane moves to the back of the plane." At which point, James Brown stands up and yells, "I'm the star of this MF show, and we're going to take off because I'm here." And when he said that, everybody in the plane was like, went crazy. Bill Withers, who was one of the artists on the plane, was sitting in the back. He just lost it. And I don't know where he got, but he was traveling with a knife, which he pulled out and started up the aisle with, I guess, the intention of killing James Brown. And so he had quite a confrontation between the two of them, and James Brown apparently would not move. And so the pilots took off knowing that we were warned that we were overweight, and we were scared to death. They took off because James Brown refused to move to the back of the plane or any of his band.
I love that story so much. I know you've told it a million times, but man, that is just incredible. Gary Stromberg, Rumble and the Soul of 74. Are all the episodes out right now?
No, they're just being released one a week.
Okay.
We're up to episode 6 now, but you can go back and start from the beginning. There's really some wonderful material here. I hate to brag about this, but I have a wonderful production crew that put together just a very exciting episode.
Yeah, it's very good. I'm about three quarters through the first one. One thing I would say as a compliment to you is, man, it's going to be hard to beat the Stones podcast because that was really good, Gary. I loved every minute of that. Listen, thank you so much for coming on here again. Congratulations to your Dodgers. And we'll catch you up and talk a little horse racing soon. How does that sound?
Yeah, I was just going to say, take care of yourself,
Mark. All right, Gary, we'll see you. Fred's still hanging out. He, every once in a while, follows my musical recommendations. And this is my new favorite song. It's just out this week, called Genie by Lovely the Band. Genie was a dreamer, she didn't say a lot. She didn't look too much when she grew up. You got to like this one. It's with the
Kooks.
Yeah,
I do too.
You know, it's also just a 2.5-minute song, like 2 minutes and 42 seconds. And I'm a big fan of the art of the 2-minute song. So check out Lovely the Band, Genie. I'll post the bumper music here after the show. Fred, I was playing racquetball this morning, but this whole thing with Whoopi Goldberg, can you walk me through what happened with her?
I think they were trying to, or she was trying to get a bunch of cakes to celebrate her birthday on air. And she said this one place, was it Copperman's, maybe, in Staten Island, did not come through with a cake.
And she thought, she alluded to the fact that maybe it's because of her politics, right?
Come on. And but they were like, no, we told her in advance that it was because we had oven problems.
A boiler problem,
and we couldn't do it because we don't want to promise something we can't deliver.
Yeah, so here's what she said on The View.
Place that made these refused to make them for me.
Oh, really?
It can't be because I'm a woman, but perhaps they did not like my politics. Yeah.
So the bakery had none of that, and they went on the defensive.
They had a boiler that was 60 or 70 years old, and the first week in November, guess what? It went on the fritz. They had to be replaced, and the reputation of Holtermans is impeccable, so rather than commit to something they couldn't guarantee, they said, we can't do it. And the person who besmirched and defamed them took that as an insult to her. Well, get over it. And frankly, the people who defamed Holtermans, the Holtermans family, should apologize to the Holtermans family for making stuff up to suit their needs.
So she did not mention the Holtermans name, but everybody knew what she was talking about. Here's Jill Holtermans.
My bakers come in 2 or 3 in the morning just to have donuts and rolls for everybody to come in and say, we have the best rolls ever. This is what makes Holtzman's Holtzman's. It's the community.
That's amazing. So we'll see if there's an apology
what?
On Monday from The View. Fred, have a good weekend.
Thanks, you too.
I'm going to do audio cut of the day here.
Stand by. Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
So apparently there is a organic effort to get Jennings to be White House press secretary. There's people all over the country are trying to get him in. No, it's not me.
Is that you?
No, because I don't want him to do it because then we lose him, right, Fred?
Right.
And I probably never see him again as a friend. But he just slayed this Jeff Dunking guy. So you're going to like this. On the topic of RFK Jr. to HHS.
There's no managerial experience in his resume. There's nothing that says he is qualified to do this job. This job that is in charge of the health of all of us, all these different lanes. If he has views and has insights around food sources, around vaccines, then those should be given in advisory roles.
Why? But
Well,
what were the qualifications of the previous ones?
Well, I think it's important
management
to always remember that you put yourself... Say that again?
What were the management qualifications? I mean, Xavier Becerra...
I'm not talking about the previous. I'm looking forward.
But you're calling into question whether he could actually do this job. And I think it's...
Absolutely. I think
it's important to discuss it because Xavier Becerra was just a lawyer and a politician with no management experience.
So does two negative...
Sylvia Burwell was a Walmart lobbyist. Donna Shalala was a university person. Look,
RFK Jr. is a nut.
Okay, so that's different than what you just said.
He
doesn't possess the requisite managerial experience, but then we get to the real issue here, which is you want to insult the man, which is your right to do because you opposed him in the election.
He will not let anything...
He just filleted
that guy, and it's not even over.
But you, doctor, are raising the issue that he has been raising, and I think they're appropriate questions to raise. I don't know whether he can be confirmed or not. The vaccine stuff at the table is obviously going to be the flashpoint of this hearing. Mm-hmm. But I'll tell you one thing. This whole issue of the CDC and these public health agencies, mm-hmm. look, public trust in the health regime in this country is as low as it's ever
been. But why?
Because of COVID.
Yes.
Right. Because of school closures. Because of mask mandates. Because this country was drugged through a bunch of condescending and heavy-handed mandates that all turned out to be garbage, and that's why it's low, and the questions are valid.
RFK is the answer to all of that.
RFK helped promote the assault on the CDC that lowered the disinformation that led to
more than a million deaths.
Oh, my God. The disinformation came from the CDC. It is unbelievable, but Scott Jennings is an American hero, to call him as my friend, and he's featured once again in Audio Cut of the Day. Have a great weekend. I'm going to try to shoot a deer. Haven't shot one in 3 years. My daughter's been reminding me of that because she shot one 6 weeks ago. Wish me luck. I'll be back on Monday afternoon. Sue, Fred, have a good weekend.
You too.
Jeannie, lovely the band. I love this song with the Kooks.
Get more at 971talk.com.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.